The following program contains harsh language some people may find offensive, like Vikings fans are bitches, the Lions have dirty assholes, and fuck the Packers. Listener discretion is advised.
It's the return of the wild style fashionist, smashing hits, make it hard to adapt to this, put pizzazz and jazz in this. Cash in this, master this, blast this, and make a clap to this. DJs don't want cuts and obey the crowd. Just pump the volume up and play it loud. Hip hop's embedded. Before I said I wouldn't let it, but me and the microphone is still magnetic. Straight off the top, I knew I'd be forced to rock. Dead floor to stop, the spot scorching hot. When I open, rocking my law seminars, massage at the bar, smoking 10-hour cigars while I'm my meaties. With more vision than TVs, I find it easy catching diabetes from fly sweeties. Sit back and wait to hear slamming track. Rock a jam by popular demand, I'm back.
I'm in control of the crowd, you know I hold it down. When it's pop, you know it's jiggy when you hear the sound. From town to town, until it's world renowned. Yeah, I rock New York City all year round.
It's all so you can swerve.
Cheers, Bears fans! This is Bears Barroom Radio. I am Aldo Gandia, and we are back after a summer hiatus. Phil Atoshin is with us.
Yeah,
he's still looking for
thanks.
A new crib and a new real estate agent in Connecticut. Help him out, brothers and sisters. Shane Marsaw, who has become an honorary member of the Mickey Mouse Club after 2 weeks in Florida. And Lauren Cox, who has been trying out all sorts of new lubes. All three of them are with us. We're missing Jose Cotto. Who the fuck knows where he is at, what he's doing, who he's fucking, who's fucking him. I don't know, but Jose, please come back soon because we always miss you fellas. How you all doing? Really
doing good,
doing good, doing good.
Are you
dropping some Rock Kim?
Yeah, did you dig that? It was your choice.
I was bobbing my head getting ready to take on Shane Marsaw in a one-on-one tackling drill.
Now what is that song about? This Guess Who's Back by Rakim.
Well,
it's about a pissed off guy that was putting in granite countertops and he decided to get himself.
You gotta tell the audience why this pissed off guy is so pissed off.
$18,000. Go ahead, Phil.
Kids throwing down ducats to make that kitchen rain buckets.
There you go, Phil. Well done. Lauren, how's your summer been? You've been back home with the folks. Are they monitoring you? Do they have like an ankle bracelet on you or something like that?
Oh, yeah, ankle and wrist, two layers of tracking.
Right, 50 guys. Shades of Gray with Lauren Cox.
50 shades, damn. Let's talk some football. The big news today on our first show, the very first show back after a couple of months off of the summer, we learned that Mitchell Trubisky has signed his rookie contract. Why don't we go to Lauren, who always keeps track of this stuff like an ESPN sports anchor. Lauren, what are the details on the deal? Tell us how much he signed for. Does it look like it's an amicable deal for both sides of the negotiations?
Yeah, so with the way rookie contracts are structured now, there's sort of a slot that Mitch Trubisky's contract had to fill. So it's essentially a one-year advanced version of the contract that Carson Wentz got last year. So it's 4 years, $29.032 million guaranteed. It's some, I don't know the exact formula they calculated there, but it's some asinine, you know, number that goes like, it's $29 million and $24 they throw on the end of that. I don't know quite how they come up with that, but that's fully guaranteed. So realistically, you know, if the Bears were going to somehow cut him at any point, they will have already paid out all of the money that he's going to get. He has almost $30 million now in the bank from the Chicago Bears. And, you know, his cap hit this year is only going to count for five, and that goes up to 6.5 next year, 7.9 the year after that. And then in 2020, his fourth year, when he's 25, he'll count $9 million against the cap, all of which is much less than Mike Glennon's contract. But combined, you have the Bears paying out over $20 million to the quarterback position, which at first seems like a lot, but when you compare that to other teams, that ranks 12th in the NFL in terms of money being paid out to all quarterbacks on rosters at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't. To me, it doesn't seem like a lot because you've got your number one quarterback and a veteran that you signed during the offseason in Mike Glennon, and then you've got your quarterback of the future who was a top two draft pick, so you know you got to spend money on that. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's money well invested. Shane, what do you think about the deal? Do you think that there's any animosity between the negotiators, or you think everything is hunky-dory?
I don't think there was any animosity. I think you kind of see these things come down, you know, especially with the offset language. I believe they said he has the same agents as Marcus Mariota and Carson Wentz. Wentz ended up agreeing to some offset language actually right before the draft, they said, when Philly took him. But Marcus Mariota went through the same type of deal. He signed about 8 days before camp opened in Tennessee for him, and Mitchell's just about right there. I know that the rookies are reported today to do some strength work and stuff like that. But, you know, the day and age that we live in now, it's not really – it's well, we all know today with lawyers it's all about language that can, you know, mess everything up. And I believe Lauren mentioned on Bears Hour Live – this offset language is really all about if, you know, what's going to happen when you cut this guy. And if that happens, I think we're all going to be pretty disappointed, and we're going to be in the market for a new GM and new everything in Chicago. So, but I'm glad to see him in tow, and now the fun starts.
Phil, you're on record as saying that you are happy with the selection of Mitchell Trubisky. What are your expectations for him in his rookie season? I know that you've talked about him potentially fighting for that number one job. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a hope with an expectation because the investment warrants what it is, you know, competition at the position. Who is Mike Glennon is a common chant on the Bears Hour Live show, our brother show here. I think it can cross over here as well. We don't know who he is. We've seen glimpses of what he's been able to do in the NFL. But really, I mean, Chicago is a different animal in and above itself, especially at that position. The long history of quarterbacks prior to Jay Cutler reads like a Dr. Seuss book of characters. So when you get in here and you already have this awkward body, long neck, and kind of this rookie glamour, you know, the kid's a good-looking young man, comes in here, fresh off signing a deal, high expectations, Cutler's gone, now he's in the booth broadcasting Bears games. I just think the whole history of the Chicago Bears is meeting at a crossroads here with this young quarterback coming in here to obviously turn the chapter of what has been, you know, less than a stellar play at the quarterback position to get this guy in the fold. I think the expectation is I am going to put my stamp on he will play in 2017, Aldo. Will he start coming out of camp? I mean, if I was the coach, I would open up the competition already. I think they've already showcased a history that they won't do that. And knowing this staff, I believe, you know, it's Mike Lennon's job for the time being. However, I think if it starts to go bad, which honestly I don't know what to expect. I think this season, more so than any, I've just felt really I'm going to sit back and watch this go. There's been seasons where my hopes have been very high, only to be let down, and my seasons where I just recognize they have a lack of talent. This year I see a lot of talent on the offensive line and the defense, front seven especially. So anything could happen in the NFL on any given Sunday in any season. So the Glennon saga is going to be, the question of who he is going to be answered. And I think Mitchell Trubisky, yes, is going to challenge this football player based on the fact that he is such an accurate and athletic kid and a competitor. So that's the kind of athlete Chicago's getting. And I know I've given you a long answer, but I just feel like it's the most important chapter in this franchise long history right now that we've had to endure, a quarterback drafted in the top five of the draft since Jim McMahon. So I definitely think the odds are in his favor.
We expected nothing less than a long answer, Phil. And I love the way you phrased it, a hope with an expectation regarding Mitchell Trubisky. I think that's a very poetic way of putting it. And also, Phil mentioned Bears Hour Live. I did a really quick intro to the start of the show. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, please know that Phil Atoshin and Lauren Cox are the co-hosts of Bears Hour Live. Tell the audience what it is Bears Hour Live is, Lauren, and how and where they can find you guys.
Yeah, so Bears Hour Live is our weekly live Chicago Bears podcast, and we do some videos on YouTube as well. Phil and I, you know, break it down live on the air. We're on Twitter, Bears Hour Live, Facebook, Bears Hour Live, YouTube, Bears Hour Live, and, you know, it's just a little something different that hopefully, we kind of feel like no one else is providing that live podcast experience with some YouTube and analysis of the tape to back it up. So that's sort of what we put our mark on there.
And it's just excellent, excellent material for all Bears fans. You really need to get attached to Bears Hour Live visually and audibly. They do excellent work. And then Shane Marsaw is our lead analyst at BearsBarroom.com. He'll be resuming, I hope, his mailbag during the season and also participating on the podcast and other things. So, and then, of course, we've got Jose Cotto, but we'll see what his parole officer says in terms of his involvement with the show and so forth. All right, let's talk a little bit more about Trubisky. Lauren, give me your thoughts. Phil just shared his thoughts about Trubisky and his rookie season. I'd like to hear yours, too.
Yeah, actually, I was on the Chicago Bears Review podcast yesterday with Larry, and we were talking a little bit about the Bears' schedule and how that's going to put on, you know, Mitch Trubisky's year. And I think you look, at least on paper at this point, the Bears' first 8 weeks of the season are really a brutal stretch before the bye. It's Falcons, Buccaneers, Steelers, Packers, Vikings, Ravens, Panthers, Saints. And I kind of feel like you're looking at maybe two wins, three at best in that first eight-game stretch. So if you're going into the bye week at 2-6, it kind of feels like at that point, that's when I'd get Mitch Trubisky in there, or at least soon after that. I don't know how good or how much good Mike Glennon is doing for you at that point. If you're losing game, then obviously he's not playing at a high enough level to be able to put your team over the top and isn't really going to build any more trade value for himself if he just goes out there and continues to lose games. I mean, well, one game that I'd circle is week 13 against the San Francisco 49ers. That would be the game that I might try and make Mitch Trubisky start his first game December 3rd, just because you're getting an opponent that should be the easiest game on the schedule, and hopefully he can come out there, put a nice little performance against the 49ers in his debut and build some confidence to take on Cincinnati, Detroit, Cleveland, and Minnesota to finish out the year. Get him five starts under his belt for the end of the 2017 season so he can go into 2018 as the number one quarterback, the clear-cut starter, with, you know, at least some games to be able to fall back on, so there's not this total 100% pressure. He's not making his week one debut of his whole career in his second season. He gets a little bit of that, gets a little bit of the rust off and gets his football legs underneath him a little bit. And, you know, he doesn't have any pressure to win those games in the last five games of the year. Just, you know what, Mitch, play the best that you can possibly play. Don't worry about the score. Don't worry about what the defense does. Just do the play calls that we tell you and continue to work on the footwork that we tell you and, you know, go with the direction of the ball that we tell you to and just work on being the best quarterback over these last five or six games of the year.
Shane, before I ask you the same question, I just want to butt in with my opinion and just say that I think Mike Glennon is going to have a solid season. I mean, I think that statistically he's going to put up a lot of yards just like Brian Hoyer did. The key question is when he gets into the red zone, is will he be able to execute better than Hoyer did and get some points on the board. But Shane, I'm interested in your overall point of view on Trubisky's rookie season and what your expectations are.
Well, expectations as a Bears fan, how does that work? They're never, never.
It was the best of times. Yes. It was the worst of times.
No, I mean, part of me is kind of excited just to see what Glennon can do. I think every Bears fan out there needs to get behind him because, you know, for the greater good of the Bears, we want to see him go out there and drive up that trade value just as high as he can. So, you know, this coming off season, we can possibly peddle him off for some draft picks and then fully usher in the Trubisky era. But getting back to Trubisky himself, we've seen this time and time again, guys. We know how the quarterback situation goes. I mean, you look at a guy like Jay Cutler, even who, you know, year after year was a warrior and went out there and suited up, but very rarely. I think he did it one time in his Bears career, and that was his first year suited up for all 16. These guys, I mean, this is the NFL, and everybody's heard people say that it's got 100% injury rate. It's going to happen, and if I was a betting man, I'm going to say Mitchell Trubisky gets his first start because of injury, maybe not ineffectiveness by Mike Glennon. I mean, I think in the overall scheme of this, I think Glennon has more pressure on him than you know a guy like Trubisky does. He's playing for his livelihood as an NFL starter. But I all signs are positive right now with Trubisky, and you do like to hear that. I mean, it's hasn't been anything too crazy going on in OTAs and whatnot, but he's got his contract out of the way. He's in Halas Hall right now lifting weights and getting ready for go time when they finally take the field on July 27th. And, you know, may the best man win. I fully expect that to be Mike Glennon. I don't – if, you know, he really goes out there and stinks up the joint, I think they're still going to put Glennon out there in week one just to see what he can do to release a little bit of the – pressure on Trubisky, not, you know, to throw him out there to the wolves so he can kind of, you know, see what it's like to be an NFL, you know, backup quarterback and see it from a different perspective, even though that's what he's mostly used to in college was being in that backup role. But it's, you know, like Phil said, you like to see that athleticism, you like to see his arm, and it's a lot of it's going to come down to injuries, how the offensive line gels, and if Kyle Long can't get out there and maybe something happens to Josh Sitton, and then you got an immobile quarterback there with Mike Glennon, maybe you will see Mitchell Trubisky a little bit earlier than everybody's expecting.
Phil, obviously one of the key points, we've talked about it, and all, you know, diehard knowledgeable Bears fans know, one of the keys to seeing success from the quarterback position is going to be the work of Dow Loggins, the offensive coordinator, who has also been a quarterback coach for a number of years. ESPN just recently reported that they speculated, the ESPN Insiders part of their website, speculated that Dow Loggins is somebody to watch as a potential NFL head coach, particularly if he has success with Glennon or Trubisky this season. Here, you know, one of the things about what I love about you guys and our talks here is that we know what's going on in Chicago Bears football better than the national media.
This is my belief about Jay Cutler.
Nobody cares, Steven. Shut the fuck up. We dissect it. We study it. These guys, you know, watch the Bears as one of 32 teams. They spend, you know, 10 minutes a day watching stuff, and they speculate with shit out of their ass and stuff. But you and I and Shane and Lauren and Jose, we know what the fuck is going on. But I want your thoughts on what you think about ESPN speculating that Dow Loggins could be an NFL head coaching candidate.
Well, I mean, if you're looking to get the first overall pick every year, maybe that would be a good pick.
Hey, Mark Trestman coached in the NFL. You don't think that Dow Loggins could be a head coach?
They like football, and that's why we like them around. They do like football.
I just With Dowell, I mean, this will be a telling year. I said it on Bears Hour Live, in all fairness to Dowell. A coach that can have humility and look at themselves and self-scout, sit down with a trusted eye, someone who's going to be realistic with them, someone they look up to, and say, look, you know, what were you thinking here? Why did you go get away from the running game here? You had, you know, you clearly were dominating there. Why did you get an empty sets on third down and shorts? You know, you're giving the defense a tell there. You're making it easier for yourself. Those types of things, if coaches or play callers specifically can understand, like, every situation, every drive, every play is so important. The best offensive coordinators are 3 to 5 moves ahead. It seems like Dowell Loggins is not at all. He was guessing at times. It was overwhelmed in the play calling role. No matter how many yards you gain, and those yard fanatics out there, those little guys with calculators and pretending to be insiders, will argue about yards, but to me, at the end of the season, and I don't look back in 2010 and wonder how many yards the Bears had on their offense. I look at how many wins they had. That, to me, on the offensive side of the football in season is most important. You need to score touchdowns. And when you have a running back, and I know I've beaten a dead horse with this, but it took me all of 10 minutes at a preseason inter-squad scrimmage / practice to recognize that 2 out of the best 5 players on the roster was number 24 and number 81. It didn't really even need much time for me to recognize that. That's why I was so hard with Shane. It's like, because I get disappointed when I look at the Chicago Bears and how they handle competition and who's the best, and that not registering with an offensive coordinator, you know, or his position coaches. You know, I'm not in that room. He could have, Coach Johnson and the running back coach at the time could have been like, no, he's not ready and he doesn't know third down pickups, so we want to keep him out. And they could have been the stronger voice for holding these young talented players, as you saw, out. So I don't want to put everything on Dowell in that regard, but ultimately it's his job and his neck on the line. So it is you saying, no, I'm getting this young kid on the line. It's 3rd and 2. I'm giving it to Howard. I'm not all of a sudden, what the hell, Jeremy Langford's in the backfield and he's stuffed at the line of scrimmage because he just doesn't have vision and he's not powerful. Those kind of things in situations, looking back, like 2 weeks ago, I just went back, watched 8 games in a row and just got a real sense of him as a play caller very easily. He did get better, Aldo, as the season wore on. Mm-hmm. And you got to give him credit because there was interchanging of quarterbacks and personnel. So I'm going to watch how he handles this Trubisky-Glennon, how he handles third down situations this year. The slot position seems to be a real emphasis this year. Last year, clearly, I mean, I can go on and on, but really, to cut it right here, you have a clear emphasis with Wright. You got Victor Cruz. You got, as you know, I love Daniel Braverman. Key known slot type of guys. What Wright is, I don't know, but Cruz and Braverman. So there's going to be an emphasis on the slot. How are they going to use that and the tight end position, which I believe, and I believe Aldo said this on a podcast that you recorded, Aldo, and I have to agree with you, that I believe the most unheralded position on this roster is the tight end position. I think there's a lot of hidden talent there, and that is going to surprise a lot of people on the offensive side of the football when this team begins practicing. Hopefully, you know, that'll be telling for me, because what I see in Pruitt, Brown, Miller, Shaheen, who's the other guy in there? Broniker, you got.
Yep. Deion Sims.
Deion Sims a key sign. I believe in that guy. I know a lot of people frown and say whatever. I think Deion Sims is a very sneaky, athletic, big-bodied player that I think is gonna be able to shine. Thanks, Lauren. So that tight end room, I believe, is improved there, and I'm excited to see how they're used. If they're used like you saw a Paulson coming on the field playing slot, then we got issues because you got the wrong offensive coordinator and therefore never would be a head coach in my book.
But Phil, if I can, Aldo, real quick.
Jump
Phil,
in, please.
You mentioned in all those tight ends, but is a guy like Brown going to essentially push Zach Miller off this 53?
I think that there is a distinct possibility that kid.
I mean, Sims and Shaheen are locks. I mean, Sims is making the money. Shaheen's a second rounder. And I mean, unless you're going to keep four tight ends, boy, I know some people don't want to hear it, but I mean, we've talked about it year after year. Miller is a fine player when he's healthy, but I really think a guy like Brown and Phil, you know, you and I and Lauren have all talked about it. He really started to make strides at the end of the year, just like you said. And I'm not giving up on a young talent like that to keep a – how old is Zach Miller? 32 years old?
I think.
32 years old. That's hurt every year. I think that's, like you said, it's going to be a real fun position group to watch in camp.
Yeah, without a doubt. I agree with everything you say, Shane. I just – there's something about Zach Miller. There's a glimmer in his eye that I see when he is healthy, and that's the only anchor to his ship there, that he can't stay on the football field. So, I mean, I wouldn't count him out, but I completely agree. When it came down to the final 53, and they will cut from 90 to 53, Aldo, that Zach Miller and Daniel Brown, kind of like twins out there, young versus old.
And to build off of the Zach Miller argument here, I'm 100% in agreement that and perhaps even more so than you guys, that I think he's as good as gone at this point. I mean, if he has a great camp and is healthy, then I think he can win himself a job back on this roster. But I think right now, if I'm making my 53-man roster prediction, he's not on it, because I think – not only was there the investment at the tight end position, but, you know, Zach Miller's role last year was largely as a slot receiver. And so not only did they invest in Deion Sims, who's going to be their starting tight end, regardless of if Zach Miller's on the roster, he is their Y tight end. He is the guy on the line of scrimmage when you have a single tight end set. I think that's already set in stone. And then I think Shaheen is sort of that wing tight end, that number two tight end already, that they would presumably have Zach Miller be. So then if you're going to make Zach Miller your slot guy, you don't go out and get Victor Cruz, Marcus Wheaton, and you have a Daniel Braverman coming back. You have a lot of these slot receivers. So I think they've kind of addressed everything that Zach Miller did last year. And so it's not as that he's already cut, but like if he doesn't really ball out and say and make the Bears keep him, I would say he's as good as gone. To put a number to it, last year, 47% of his routes were run from the slot. So he was almost more a slot receiver than a tight end.
Well, if
and he still have the two young guys in Broniker and Pruitt that have practice squad eligibility, so you can cover your bases there too by bringing one of those guys, you know, onto the practice squad. You know, if something were to happen with the Sims and Shaheen and Brown moving forward. But you guys are making a great point too. It's just the more and more I think of it, I think I don't. I agree with Lauren. I don't think he's making the 53.
Yeah, but I wouldn't put. I agree with a lot of what Lauren said, but I wouldn't put anything in stone until we see how Sims does in camp. If Sims doesn't have a strong camp, then Zach Miller makes the team if the Bears really want to win some games in 2017. If they want to tank and have another top five draft pick next season, then they'll drop Zach Miller. But Zach Miller, I've seen enough of this guy to know that this guy is going to deliver. He's going to be open over the middle. He's going to make the top catch. He's going to move the chains. And we don't know that about Sims. What we know about Sims is that he's a good blocker, and that And that's necessary, particularly with the right tackle situation that we have, and the left tackle situation that we have.
So. Hey, you forgot one. You forgot one going on Zach Miller. He's gonna get hurt.
Oh,
you can etch that in stone.
Yeah, but you know, at least you got him for 5 or 6 games.
Yeah, right.
And part of the Zach Miller thing too that I did overlook here is that his contract is pretty cheap. And, you know, I think he's supposed to make a little over $2 million, and like $500,000 that is guaranteed. So it's not as though they couldn't just stash him. And even if they wanted him to be their number three tight end, that's not really financially, they're not invested in him enough to have to keep him, or they're not going to save, you know, $5 million from cutting him. It's a really an inexpensive contract.
Yeah.
One thing I got to piggyback off Aldo, because I think he has a good coaching point, you know. You got a new quarterback in here and a young quarterback. How those guys mesh with those personnel is going to be the defining moment for a guy, a coaching staff that wants to win. I think that point is very valid here, Aldo, because Zach Miller has been an NFL football player. He knows the rigors of the game, and he knows how to get open, just like you said. When healthy, he could be a dynamic playmaker, not just a run-of-the-mill guy. We're not talking about a Dominic Rosario here having one game.
Your boy.
Dante Rosario.
Dante. So we're talking about an established player. The health is the key issue there. But I think the really good point for Bears fans to grasp on is to recognize that continuity and fluidity in an offense for a position that is important, very, very important for any quarterback, let alone a young quarterback. And let's face it, Glennon, as many years he's been in the NFL, he's not played the amount of snaps that, you know, a veteran coming in has played. So that tight end position, if Zach Miller comes into camp and starts lighting it up, I think the Chicago Bears are going to have a hard time doing a Lauren Cox special to him.
We asked for some questions via Twitter from some of our followers at Bears Barroom. So if you're not following us, please do. And Mario Cuomo took some time off from being the governor of the state of New York to tweet us, how early will the right tackle get our quarterback killed? I gotta go to Phil on this, who has been probably the strongest critic about Bobby Massey since he got here. But I know, Phil, you and I have talked, and I've looked at your film evaluation of Bobby. You have to admit that he has improved some as the season went on. The question is those early games in the season, how poorly is he going to play, right?
Well, the real question
you took my answer.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
The real question is if what will happen first? Will Aldo pronounce Bobby Massey's last name correctly before Bobby Massey gets cut from the Chicago Bears?
Did you notice that when I said his last name, my voice kind of trailed off because I wasn't quite sure?
Yeah, Bobby Massey. I was like, what the hell's going on?
It's been a year and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Can we chime the Macy's Day Parade for Aldo?
Yeah. Thank God McLennan's not here.
That part of the brain has been hammered by LSD, PCP, and you name it, PPP.
And that's just your Wednesday night.
Right. Yeah.
Were you at Woodstock, Aldo?
Yeah, I think I was. I don't remember.
Hydrogenous Crash Pool says hello, Aldo.
Hey, how you doing, sweetie?
Well, I think you hit the hammer on the nail, rather, on the head. And Bobby Massey's early season performances have been pathetic, really. You know, it seems
it's
to be
every year in the league.
Yeah,
every
exactly.
Year in the league, it's like that.
And that Shane Marsaw nugget to begin the show about Glennon and injury with consistently happening. I mean, we lost two quarterbacks last year. You know, can it happen again? Yeah, it tends to happen. And when protection breaks down off the edges, that's when it usually happens the most. So I can see Bobby Massey. I'm hoping that a true competition of the best five offensive linemen transpires this preseason in practices and in games, and they truly make all an all-out effort to put the best, their best five protectors out there to help the young quarterbacks and not just do the Dave Wannstedt special and this guy's a right tackle and he's a right guard. And then, oh, no, you know, put the best five out there. Open it up. If the guard is equal, then push the guard to tackle. That's all I'd ask my offensive line coach to assess. And if Bobby Massey's your best right tackle, then that's what it is. But you'll see it in games. Hopefully Bobby comes ready to play, you know. And but I don't have a lot of confidence in that football player.
Do the Bears have confidence in him? I mean, they went out and threw money at was it Ricky Wagner? Was that the guy's name?
Wagner, yep. He ended up going to Detroit. And then they tried to get the other Detroit guy.
So I'm not sure how much confidence we should bestow upon Bobby Massey if the Chicago Bears themselves don't have much confidence in him because they tried to replace him. And I think his contract, Lauren, maybe you have the numbers right there. I think most of his guarantee is up after year one.
Yeah.
Bobby also, Massey, isn't it?
Is easily cut at this point. I don't have the exact numbers, but I know it was pretty much just year one guaranteed. Everything else,
right.
save $5-ish million if you cut him now.
And is Tom Compton going to be an under-the-radar guy that they went out and got that's going to go in and try to kick somebody's ass in camp? I mean, I don't have a whole bunch of confidence in the guy, but he's, you know, he stepped in into the Super Bowl cold and played this year and played, you know, halfway decent. But is he the type of guy that's going to go out there and make a name for himself at right tackle, you know, battling Massey? So that's another fight to watch.
Yeah, Lauren and I talked about Compton, Aldo, and Shane. I think Brian Perez was talking about it too.
Privately.
I think that's privately.
Oh, well, I mentioned it on the show, but Brian hasn't like gone and written or tweeted about it, but we talked about how he thinks there's a chance that a guy like Tom Compton could beat out a Bobby Massey at training camp and be your week one starting right tackle.
And I honestly think this guy, I consider Bobby Massey, I'm trying to think of a Bear to compare him from the past. I mean, not Bobby Massey, Compton. He's just a barroom bouncer that's athletic. So if you put that kind of football
Schaefer.
Player on the football field.
Remember yep. Schaefer?
Yes, that's a very good
Kevin comparison. Schaefer, yeah.
He's a more athletic Kevin Schaefer that if he plays consistent where Bobby Massey doesn't and you're in practice and you're like, wait a second. This guy keeps effing up every – I could swear here. He keeps fucking up every play.
You bastard. Oh, my God.
Why am I going to keep him out there and instead of a Compton who's going to give every blood, sweat drop down my ball on every play? So – that's where I think a Compton comes into play here for the Bears. And that's what I'm talking about the five guys, Shane. That guy's a dark horse. If he's the best, get him out there. He doesn't have to be a name.
I believe in an interview after he signed, he even made the comment that one of the reasons that he chose Chicago was that they promised him a chance, you know, a legitimate shot to go out there and start. Yeah, I believe that was on...
Gotta find that, Aldo.
Yeah, have to look that up.
I will look.
Yeah, that they promised him. Maybe it was on. Maybe Aaron Lemming reported it on Barry Porter. That fucking genius. But
well, sources close to me say Compton's either says that he might get a shot at starting or he might not.
Right.
Start. Just.
I think I found it. It was a Chicago Sun Times here. Let's see, Tom Compton. Was asked to see Tom Compton after talking with the 49ers, Lions, and Falcons. Offensive tackle Tom Compton chose the Bears with one thing in mind: quote, just a chance to compete. He said Monday that was kind of a big thing coming out here. All I really want is just a chance to show I can play and hopefully bring some wins to the Bears. I don't know any specifics at this point. I know they'll try and plug me in wherever and see where I kind of fit in here. So I'm kind of excited to see what'll happen there.
I wonder,
vague, but
I wonder,
you know, he's Yeah, it's there.
I wonder if he's doubting his selection now that Taylor Decker with the Lions is gone for the season or most of the season. But good stuff, guys. And I want to get to Tom O'Malley here, who sent us a tweet with about 50 questions in 141 characters. Really well done, Tom. He asked, safety battle, tight end reps. If Morgan or Garasu show real well or an injury to an offensive tackle, any chance to move Long or Whitehair? I think we've discussed the tight end situation enough. Clearly, the person who's going to get the most reps is, like Lauren said, is the guy who earned the big contract during the offseason, and then after that, it's based on performance. But I really want to talk about this Long or Whitehair thing going to offensive tackle, because I do see that as a possibility. And now we've heard that Kyle Long is being considered for left guard because of the injury situation and the shoulder injury, and it's better for him to play on the left side, then why not make the fucking move and move him to left tackle, you know?
All right.
I mean, am I wrong here, fellas? Is this the time?
What a different tune from 12 months ago.
Yeah, Phil and I had a really good fight about that topic. Here's a highlight from it.
Right.
That was a fun show. But the issue is, if they're going to move him to the left side of the line, move him now and move him to the left tackle position.
Right now, in my film study, your best offensive lineman is Cody Whitehair by a long margin. Better than Sitton, better than Long. So to me, if I'm the head coach, I'm keeping that fucking guy at center. Because he was special, guys. I'm serious, like, jaw-dropping. As the season went down and he got more comfortable, he's doing things that eight-year veterans can't do. So that right there, the decision to put him at center, that was a great one. And because I really liked the football player at guard, and I thought he could play left tackle. But that freaking guy, for the record, was so impressive at center that makes me wonder about Grasso, because he's that special. So you're talking about a guy that single-handedly helped Jordan Howard do what he's done, because he did all the dirty work. I mean, getting to the second level is, you know, a challenge. But being able to scoop a three technique and get across the face of a shaded tackle on the opposite side and do some of the things that he's doing on tape in the zone scheme as well, and showcasing power. There's one play against Detroit. I gotta film it and just put it up. He buries their nose guard. Then he goes out to the second level and absolutely demolishes Levy and their other linebacker, pancakes them both. And Jordan Howard gets like 5 yards because, you know, Bobby Massey missed the cutoff. But his job, I mean, he's dominant. And I just think the move to echo Aldo's, fuck it, just put the guy at left tackle and call it a day with him. You got Cush and this kid Morgan to answer Tommy O'Malley. I'm going to keep a close eye on that freaking athletic freak, because he reminds me of a former Dallas Cowboy with the strength that this football player possesses in short area quickness and burst. You know, I dare to compare him yet, but he reminds me of a young Larry Allen. That's a very good compliment, this kid Morgan. The athleticism and power that he showcases. Granted, it's Division II, I know. But when he was at the Senior Bowl, he was showing the same kind of traits for Division 1A competition. How he does it preseason is going to be exciting, Tom. And I would not hesitate to move Long to tackle now.
You know, one of the reasons Phil and I get into an occasional fight on the show is because I agree with him 99.9% of the time. So I figure now that I finally disagree with him on something, I got to fucking, you know, put up my dukes and have a fight with him. But again, Phil, I can't disagree with anything you said. You know, Cody Whitehair, And maybe he should have played at that high level for a second round pick as a center, but he wasn't drafted as a center. He didn't play center in college. He played left tackle at college. He played and he was slotted in as at left guard until the injury to Garasso and the pickup of Sitton. And so all of a sudden,
fucked it up already.
Rash pool. Rash pool.
Swinging a miss.
I have to admit that I've been drinking some beer here tonight. What is it I'm drinking here? This is
a number four, a Garasso with cream, please.
In the Day Slayer, it's called
a Venti Grasso with rum.
A Venti Grasso.
9.8% alcohol per bottle, and the bottle's pretty fucking big. Anyway, I'm with you totally on that. All right, anybody want to comment on long or white hair possibly moving to tackle?
I'll just bring up one quick thing that I picked up, and you guys know how I pick up on these little things when I'm watching these videos or in articles and stuff like that. When they introduced Mike Glennon in free agency, and you know, this just it's just one of those little things, and maybe it doesn't mean anything, but when they brought him to Hallis Hall and they're taking him throughout and introducing him to Loggins, and they had Cody Whitehair there, and Dowell Loggins specifically said, "This is your center. You better get used to this guy." And it was Cody Whitehair that they brought out. And they did the same. They did the same exact thing with Mitchell Trubisky after they drafted him. Mm-hmm. This is your center. You're going to want to get to know this kid. So, you know, to me, but then again, Ryan Pace's quotes, you know, stick out too when he's talking about Hronus Kersu. You know, we really view him as a center only. And are they willing to cut bait, you know, really, and just make him a primary backup at this point? Because really, all of the reviews Grisou was getting last offseason was that he had put on weight, he had gained strength, and he was really playing well before he ripped up his knee on the Soldier Field turf, just essentially walking up the sideline.
Lauren and I saw him at camp, and disagree with me, Lauren, if what I'm saying is incorrect, but I thought he was playing really well at camp before the injury.
From what I could tell, I mean, you can't always get a good feel for that in camp just absolutely, because it's not a real game situation. But I mean, there was no red flags by any means.
Right.
Well, let me ask you this, guys, real quick. You guys answer. You know, I'm telling you, as a self-proclaimed offensive line aficionado here, he's your best offensive lineman at center. And probably one of the best centers in the whole NFL. That's how stupendous this football player played. And I could go with Lauren Cox and just do film of the guy and put it out there on Twitter to back it up. It's there. It's not hiding anywhere. And that being said, do you just try to appease a Garasso, or do you, you know, center to me is so important to this offense and the zone blocking scheme that they're using, and Jordan Howard reading Whitehair's blocks over and over and over again to get away from that, to me, and I'll let you guys answer, would be a huge red flag on Dowell Loggins and company.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you can base any move. I mean, at this point, you know, it's kind of like same type of deal with Kevin White, you know, two straight years of injuries. I mean, Grisou's at least played, you know, more snaps than Kevin White has. But you're right. If you're talking about Cody Whitehair being special, like you said, or maybe, you know, potentially one of the best centers in the entire NFL, are you willing to make that move to kick him possibly outside where he's maybe he's Charles Leno out there? You know, we don't know at this point. I mean, is there another team in the NFL, honestly, that just, I mean, we see it year after year with Kyle Long. Now maybe we're going to see it with Cody Whitehair. You get these young, talented guys, but leave it up to the Chicago Bears. Well, we're going to put them here, right guard. Now we're going to put them in right tackle. Oh, shit, now we're going to move them over to left guard. Well, maybe we'll move him to left tackle. Cody Whitehair, you know, one of the best draft picks we've had in the last decade. You know, he's we're going to draft him at guard. Well, now you're playing center because Grisou's hurt. Hey, maybe we'll move you out to left tackle now. It's just I don't see any other teams doing this with their young, promising offensive lineman year after year. If you see a guy has a bright future, you know, and we heard Phil Emery when he drafted him, we look at Kyle Long potentially as a franchise type left tackle. Well, put him there. We've been horrible for years. Put him there and let him learn. It's not like it's cost us football games at this point. So I don't know. It's a big catch 22 for me because, like you said, Phil, Cody Whitehair, I was a fan of the pick, but he exceeded all of my expectations, and I would just feel sick to my stomach if they derailed any of that with a position switch that didn't go smoothly.
I've seen it happen so much in Chicago sports in the 45 years that I've been following Chicago sports. Yeah. They just fuck up a player. The management, the coaching staff, they just fuck up a player. I mean, we've seen it over and over with the Bears, and if you follow the Cubs,
Devin
the
Hester.
Sox. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a prime example. But I do think that some players have the mental makeup and the physical tools to be able to be versatile, to be a jack of all trades, but that is very rare in sports. You know, certain players just love their routine. They love showing up to work knowing I'm playing this position, I've got it all down pat, I don't have to worry about the guys next to me, to my left or to my right. I know what I'm doing, and this is where I'm comfortable at, and you move them somewhere else and they just fall apart. And the question is, you know, is Cody Whitehair that person? Is Kyle Long that person? I got a feeling that they're not. I think that these guys are versatile because, as Phil has rightly pointed out, he is an athlete. This guy is an athlete that could probably play tight end tomorrow. And Whitehair, because of his success at college on the left side of the line, I wouldn't mind taking a peek at him at the left guard and left tackle position. But again, Phil also makes that point that how he played center last season was spectacular.
With this offensive line really being in flux and not knowing, does it make sense to move these guys now and let Mike Glennon get the shit kicked out of him and have them seriously, I know it sounds terrible, but I mean, let them go through their lumps while the giraffe is back there, and then they're, you know, become a cohesive unit when it's Trubisky time.
Hey, $16 million will pay for a really nice wheelchair.
Yeah, you're damn right. But seriously, it's, you know, it's maybe Jordan Morgan gets in there and plays, you know, fantastic at a guard position, and then they're gonna move him to right tackle next year because this is the Chicago Bears. But you know, I don't know. There's no real rhyme or reason to it.
No, I think that's a great question. I really do. I mean, you know, we know, you know, and this is a question that I was going to ask you guys at the end of the show about what their record is going to be at the end of the season. But in my opinion, I don't think this is a Super Bowl contending team. They could surprise us and make the playoffs, but if they make the Super Bowl, you know, that's going to be one of the greatest sports stories in history. You know, this is a team that, because of the situation that they're in and with player personnel and what's happened in the last several years with poor draft choices and poor coaching decisions and blah, blah, blah. This is a team that's building up. I mean, this is a team that drafted Trubisky so that in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, we would be in the Super Bowl. So why not look at experimenting a little bit with the offensive line and solidifying that so that when Trubisky takes center, that offensive line is playing five studs.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the number one thing they say about an offensive line? Continuity, and they got to gel together.
Yeah.
And but yet we see them year after year. All right, you're going to go here. Next year, we're going to put you over here. Before the start of the season, fuck it, we're going to put you over here because we think you're a good talent. And you just don't see that continuity in Chicago. Yes, injuries have played a huge factor, but if it was me and I was a coach of the Chicago Bears, I want to see where the future is brightest for each of the players, and they're going to go to that position, and that's going to be the, you know, until they prove that they can't do it, they're going to be there.
And part of that continuity, too, is just even the offensive line coach. I mean, third one in 3 years right now, and maybe even more before that, because I guess Cromer was still offensive line coach technically before the last guys. Or was it 2 years? Was it the same guy 2015 and 2016 with Fox?
Magazoo. That was his
Magazoo was okay. So it's okay. So technically, it's not third in 3 years, but it is third in 4 years.
Yeah, it's the same type of deal, though. You look at the wide receiver coach. Kevin White's going in year three. He's got his third wide receiver coach, and that's look at our wide receiver depth chart. I mean, with it being so in flux, it really you put it perfectly there, Lauren. You see this mash unit of just change every single year, and to expect continuity there is crazy.
The other thing that makes sense about what Shane has said, and I get back to Kyle Long maybe moving to left tackle, is that Kyle Long admitted that he can do a better job at being a leader in this team, being a leader in the locker room, being an emotional leader. And the guy, that's his DNA. I mean, you listen to the guy, talk, you read his tweets, you see how he interacts with players at camp and so forth. This guy is a leader. And so you can go to him and say, we want you now to step up the in your leadership capabilities like you said you would, move to left tackle or move to wherever the fuck we want you to, and then lead the rest of these guys into being a top-notch team. So, yeah, I agree with Shane that this is a good year to kind of experiment and solidify that line. So that by the end of the season, we know who our five blockers are for the quarterback of the future, and that position is settled because you win a lot of games when you have a strong offensive line, and I don't care who is quarterbacking. You really, really do.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they keep pumping out is the interior of the Bears' offensive line and how great it is. So if you're going to now shuffle the deck again, you're just taking what Shane is saying and continuously being a dumpster fire, much like the Jacksonville Jaguars and these Jets that continue to shuffle offensive lines. And what transpires? They are losing cultures.
And the Barry Port podcast, dumpster fire.
Yeah. And I was thinking about this yesterday. And about how the Bears offensive line is sort of the Bears, because I was brought up like the whole, Mitchell Trubisky is Ryan Pace's Drew Brees and Shaheen is his Jimmy Graham and Cohen is the Darren Sproles, that sort of comparison that was made. But it made me think about the offensive line too. And I remember when we talked last year and we had the great Kyle Long versus Aldo versus Phil Kyle Long debate. Aldo had mentioned how that New Orleans prioritize the interior of the offensive line over the exterior, and I think we're seeing that directly reflected in Ryan Pace again. Obviously they signed Bobby Massey in an effort to to bolster the outside, but clearly it feels more like the Saints here with two bookend guards, these solid guard. I mean, there's a debate about how good Kyle Long is at guard, but two solid starters at guard and a very and perhaps the best of them all at center, just like it was in New Orleans back in the day, where their offensive tackles weren't horrible there, and obviously Ryan Pace isn't going to just completely neglect those positions, but clearly the money and the emphasis has been on those interior positions, much like it was in New Orleans.
The game nowadays is about getting rid of the ball quick, and that means you need a super strong interior line. If you're going to play football the way the Oakland Raiders played it in the 70s and 80s with seven-step drops, then you need a fucking offensive tackle who can hold a block for 6 seconds. But, anyways, we already had that fight.
Just think about how in flux this entire thing would be if Green Bay didn't release Sitton last year.
Yeah.
Think about that. We'd be like, wow, can Grisou come back and play center this year? We Cody Whitehair played at guard. Kyle Long's coming off his surgery to his ankle. I mean, there would definitely be a lot more questions along this line.
Yeah.
That we're hoping is going to block for Glennon and Trubisky. So thank you, Green Bay.
I want to get to – yeah, really. Thank you, Packers, you fuckers. I want to get to another question that Tom O'Malley had on his list of questions here. He wanted to talk about the safety battle, which I think is a great topic for us to tackle. We're going to go long on this show. I might divide it up into two shows or whatever, but if you guys can stick around, let's just go for it. Okay, listeners, this is where I decided to split the show because we went on and talked for another full hour. It was like getting together with family after you haven't seen them for a long time, except there was no fighting. Lots of good football talk coming up in hour number two and a bunch of laughs as well. And please give us a follow on Twitter at Bears Barroom and make sure that you follow Draft Dr. Phil and Lauren Cox on Twitter. Just go over to at Bears Hour Live. That's a good starting point. Or head over to their website, bearshourlive.com. Then follow Shane Marsaw at Wasram. I'm probably mispronouncing that. At Wasram. Wasram. He's always posting great bear stuff and is always willing to debate a topic with you. And my fellow Puerto Ricano who was unable to join us tonight, Jose Cotto, he can be found on Twitter at Dos Pesos, and that's DEUCE_PESOS. He will gladly engage you in a Twitter debate. I warn you, though, that make sure you bring a gun to the knife fight because Jose is always packing with some great football knowledge. Again, I will post part two of our pre-camp show on Friday. Thanks for listening. And remember, if you drink, please don't drive and always bear down.